Hare Krishna.
Oh, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Welcome. Please, where's Maharaj's seat?
Next door, my older brother.
Never tiring.
I assume that, of course. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much, Sita. Being the inauguration day of ISKCON in 1966. Therefore, I guess that one of the things is to recall some of the sort of early days of ISKCON before the various institutionalized kind of aspect set in. So I'll try and, it's very hard with these kind of, a little hard anyway with these kind of discussions because I generally end up reverting back to my own memories and some of those are getting a bit weak now after 30 years. So you have to give me a little bit of time sometimes to remember exactly those very early days. Of course, when I first joined was just the end of 69. Prabhupada was already in the UK with John Lennon and George Harrison, and the devotees were staying in the kind of what is called the Betterton area. It's called Betterton Street in Covent Garden, and my own experience when I came to the temple was that there was a tremendous amount of love for Srila Prabhupada, something I don't see nowadays, sadly, in the same intensity. It was a complete experience. I'd never experienced a group of people in love with with one person. And it wasn't until I actually saw Srila Prabhupada that I realized what was that attraction, you know, to some degree, because it's my first experience of seeing Srila Prabhupada was that he had this, what is called, of course, an oceanic smile. His smile was like oceanic. It was like someone who was looking into the spiritual world, but almost peeping into our world. Whereas in our reverse experience, we'd be trying to peep into the spiritual world. But it became very clear to me that Prabhupada was actually living in the spiritual world and almost like forcing himself to stay in the material world just to give us some association. One of the experiences I had with that was that there was a time when Srila Prabhupada, we first got very the manor. So Prabhupada was giving lectures every day in the theater room. And at that time it was very intense kirtans. It would be very, very intense because the theater room was very acoustic. And the place was packed with devotees and there'd be just Prabhupada and the Vyasa sign. And then I saw that actually, basically every day Prabhupada was going into ecstasy. So he was in and out of consciousness throughout the kirtan. And you could see that it wasn't that Srila Prabhupada was in any way drifting off, but actually that he was totally in very deep ecstasies. Many times I experienced that myself with seeing Prabhupada, especially in Buried Place, because Prabhupada had a very deep love for Radha Landaneshwara, and that would be manifest in his childish behavior almost when Prabhupada would, you could see this sort of, when I say childishness, I mean this pure innocence of Prabhupada's darshans when he would come to Bari Place. And it's very, very hard to describe, but you could tell that Prabhupada was sitting with Radha and Krishna, and he was bringing us to them. So, of course, the early days on that point of view were that they were very intense, because basically, of course, when I joined them, we didn't have any books, we didn't have any restaurants or farms, or all we had was madanga and kartals. So our days were very much getting up in the morning, and we'd have a full morning program. Then we'd go on Harinam from about 10 o'clock all day, and we'd stop at lunchtime, 1 o'clock, out in the park, have some prasad. Then we go the rest of the day, all day, and we come back about 6, and then we have our evening aarti, and we'd have prasadam, evening aarti, and then we'd all go back out again till 10 o'clock at night. And that happened every single day, every single week. Maybe Sunday we didn't go out. And so I remember very wonderfully that the morning programs were very, very static. There was an amazing lack of mentalism, which again I don't see so much of nowadays, but it is their lack of so of course when Srila Prabhupada would come, needless to say, we would have these gigantic kirtans at the airport, and Prabhupada would suddenly, the doors would open, Prabhupada would appear within our midst, and I always remember that the feeling of looking at Prabhupada was that everyone would actually cry. So there's this very transcendental relationship, not only between the devotees and Prabhupada, but also between Prabhupada and his disciples. And one of the things also I noticed was that Prabhupada seemed to have an individual relationship with every devotee. He had somehow a way of reciprocating exactly with every devotee. I became aware of that because there was quite a few characters in the temple, and Prabhupada seemed to know each one of them. And because things were quite intimate at that time, he seemed to know the background to certain devotees. There was only about 8 devotees, 8 brahmacharis anyway, and then there was about 6, 7. There was about 6 or 7 brahmacharinis. So one of the nice things was we got a lot of time to actually be in Prabhupada's room. We would just walk in. Sometimes even when Prabhupada was having Mangalati, I would walk in. And Prabhupada had his own deities. In the very early days, he had his own deities, Radha Govinda. I believe they were Radha Govinda. And Prabhupada would do his Mangalati, and this little girl called Saraswati, she would come in. Saraswati was... Prabhupada had an amazing relationship with children. One of the things that, of course, about this recent court case hurts probably more than any other thing ever happened in ISKCON is the fact that somehow anyone could try and implicate Srila Prabhupada in these horrible affairs. Because Prabhupada's own mood with children was completely deep. It was never casual. It was actually a very deep relationship. Saraswati would crawl all over Prabhupada at Mangalati, and then she'd go up to the deities and take things off the altar, and Prabhupada would just sit there. And she had a juggernaut she carried on a piece of string. She'd be dragging this juggernaut around the temple. Everyone was freaking out at her because didn't think it was a very good way to look after Lord Jagannath. Somehow even that Prabhupada tolerated. It was a Jagannath toy. I saw a doll. And basically, she could go into Prabhupada's room at any time. And she could just basically sit with Prabhupada. Sometimes she would play, Prabhupada would play with her for ages, not just for a couple of moments. And I saw him do that with a number of children. And I think even his intimacy with her was so fond that even Prabhupada's servant, Pushottam, he later on blew. But I don't think he could handle it, the fact that Prabhupada would allow her just to run riot around his room the way she did. Prabhupada never told her off. Of course, remembering back to those days, also the striking thing was that, of course, the morning walks, the kirtans, the classes, but also was Prabhupada's tremendous desire to preach. He would want, practically speaking, everything we did with Srila Prabhupada at that time was based around preaching. When we go on morning walks, sometimes we were walking around London with Prabhupada looking for buildings. Prabhupada would go many different areas of London looking for a suitable building. There was many journeys we undertook with Prabhupada to look at various churches. Unfortunately, my memory is not perfect. I can't remember everything he would say, but sometimes he would obviously comment upon the empty churches. And many times Prabhupada would be looking at buildings, and Prabhupada would be mentioning how we should get astronomical buildings that we could never afford. One of the buildings, of course, was the highest building in London, which one time Prabhupada was walking past and he said, "Why don't you buy this building?" At that time, I think we had about 2 or 3 pounds in our pocket. And we said, "Prabhupada, it would be very difficult to buy that." And Prabhupada said, "Oh?" He said, "At least you get one floor you can get." So, the another wonderful thing was is that because there was few devotees there, after we would have morning class, many times we would sit in Prabhupada's room listening to the class again. And Prabhupada would stop the tape and then ask the devotees, "So what did you think of this point?" And Prabhupada would like to get into debates. He'd particularly like if we took the atheistic point of view and argue with Srila Prabhupada. And then I remember one time that a number of times actually with the discussions would lead from those talks. Prabhupada's lectures. And one time one devotee kind of cheekily asked Prabhupada, he said, "That Srila Prabhupada, why do you listen to your own classes?" Which I thought was rather cheeky. And Prabhupada turned to him and looked and said, "Because I did not speak to him." And then I could realize what Prabhupada really meant was that the communications from Srila Prabhupada were coming directly from the Super Soul, and therefore even Prabhupada would be enlivened by listening to him. So that was one thing that I vividly became aware of, that Srila Prabhupada wasn't acting on his own false ego. To try and describe that Prabhupada's activities were totally directed by Krishna from within his heart. I think one time when Prabhupada listened to the Krishna book, tears were coming down his eyes. There was the description of autumn. And a devotee asked Prabhupada why these tears were coming, because he said, "Such beautiful thing, how could I write?" So Prabhupada was appreciating Krishna's mercy. You know, I need to kind of meditate a little bit on my memory gets a bit. Maybe Maharaj will speak a little bit. Give me a chance to focus. I always find it hard to actually just remember Prabhupada pastimes, because it requires, for me anyway, it requires me some time to get all the geographical and time scales into place. Because many of the stories I've told before, so I don't like to tell the same ones. But exactly remembering detailed ones, sometimes I need to sort of get a little bit spurred on by memory cells that are wearing out.
May I ask you, were you there when Srila Prabhupada was visiting the Beatles and having contact with the Beatles? Because many times people ask me about this time and how it was.
Well, I came when they were just moving out of John Lennon's estate. We just got Bury Place. So technically, we were staying at George's house at that time. So most of the contact that I saw was between George and Prabhupada. Although I saw him also mixed with other Beatles, but not as intimately as John Lennon's estate. John Lennon's estate was in a sense the it was when the most enthusiasm from the Beatles towards Prabhupada. I think after the episode at the estate, Prabhupada didn't very much like John Lennon or Yoko Ono. Because they were on drugs at the time. They were into kind of heroin. And there's actually a famous story. John Lennon had wrote a song called Cold Turkey, which nothing to do with having a cold, of course. But so what happened was that John had asked Prabhupada to come and listen to this song. In order that to get Prabhupada's view, John was very impressed with the song. So he asked Prabhupada to come. Now John had this amazing equipment, which obviously being a very rich Beatle, he had a built recording studio in his room. And this equipment was probably the top range of its day. So Prabhupada, being polite, kind of obliged, and him and Shyamasundara and Gurdas, they went and sat in Prabhupada's front room, in John Lennon's front room, and Yoko Ono was there. So then John decided, he was telling Prabhupada about his songs, and then he said, let me play you this song. So he put on the thing and it wouldn't work. And he couldn't believe it, it just wouldn't work. And then he went fiddling with this and that and this and that, and he was getting really frustrated because, you know, this is like really expensive equipment. And then Prabhupada said, oh, I also have a song. Because now the time was getting a little bit, running out a little bit. So he said, I also have a song. And John, I guess at that time, was getting fed up with his song. So he said, well, let's try your song. So he put Prabhupada's in and it played. So that was quite hilarious. There's also another time which wasn't so great, was when John and Yoko, they'd actually, Prabhupada was coming back from a morning walk, and they called Prabhupada in a room, and in that room there was kind of pictures of John and Yoko naked together. So Prabhupada wasn't very impressed with that. And then they wanted to get Prabhupada privately, so they called him in the room, and then they said to Prabhupada, how do you do this? How are you doing it? So Prabhupada said, you know, he basically asked them, how I'm doing what? He said, how are you making your disciples so completely dedicated to you? So they said it in a cynical sort of way, like as if Prabhupada was some, you know, cheap yogi who was using some mystical hypnotism to get the disciples so dedicated. I think Prabhupada just looked at them in kind of disgust and said, Hare Krishna. So right after that, Prabhupada said, let us go. So he left, I think about a week later after that. So with John Lennon anyway, I think John Lennon had basically was basically a very arrogant sort of guy, although people always look at him as some sort of hero, but he was very self-centered and arrogant. I think as far as George goes, there was much more appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's depth and spirituality. One of the things about Prabhupada was that he never compromised preaching, so he never tried to flatter anyone. Many times big people would come and see him. I remember when Donovan, of course, nowadays is nothing. In those days, he was in England anyway. He was a big star. And does this work? Because it saved my voice. Yeah. It's kind of funny there. Can we not bring this next time? It's such a little thing. It's like, I'd better put on my nose or something. Like that. Hare Krishna. Yeah, Donovan was a star in those days, and he came with, what happened was that a lot of George's friends were coming to Prabhupada, Sterling Mark. George was into racing cars, he still is actually. He had a car made for £500,000, and he's written Hare Krishna all over the car. So fine, you can't even see it. And he's got a Lord Nrisimhadev, a gold Lord Nrisimhadev in his car. But anyway, Prabhupada would just preach so heavily. Actually, even Donovan was getting seriously interested, and he brought these couple of groupies with him and a few sidekicks, and they weren't very interested. So sometimes these these kind of room conversations are quite interesting, because you can see how Prabhupada never tried to flatter their material situation. He always just was interested in their spiritual welfare. So he would give them kind of heavy preaching. And Prabhupada could see that these friends of George, they wanted to kind of have a guru, because in those days it was very fashionable to have a guru, so to put a picture on your mantelpiece. And then everyone who would come for some smoking of dope would see your guru on the mantelpiece. So Prabhupada said to Donovan, he said, "Guru is not for mantelpiece." And he started kind of chastising. And then the girl who was with Donovan, she said that, I think she said something like, "Oh, so you're becoming a little angry, Swami, that's not very spiritual," or something. And Prabhupada said, "What do you know about spiritual?" I kind of shut her up. I think the word is uncompromising. Prabhupada was very uncompromising. And one time, especially with porters, there was one, of course, reporters were always trying to trick Prabhupada, catch him out. So one time I was in a room with Prabhupada, these reporters were there. So one guy said to Prabhupada, he said, "So, can you see God?" He had his notebook out. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, "Yes." He didn't know what to say. Prabhupada said, "Yes, I can see God." He said, "Just as I am seeing you, I can see God." So that kind of shut him up. There's no more questions out of him. Another time, one devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, "Is the super soul standing or sitting?" And Prabhupada closed his eyes and said, "He is standing." Maharaj,
You explain it so nicely.
No, I can't. Of course, the thing that everyone loved about being with Prabhupada was the morning walks. And it's many of the ways that Srila Prabhupada would behave on morning walks. They were always very unpredictable. You could go on a morning walk with Prabhupada one morning and Prabhupada would be silent the whole time, wouldn't say a word. Then the next morning Prabhupada would talk the whole time. It's particularly one morning walk that I really shook me. There was a time when Hansa Duda, Schloss Redischoff, was attacked. And I don't know if you know the story, but basically the police came and raided Schloss Redischoff. And they took all the money from the safe, which was about, 700,000 Deutschmarks? Something like 700,000 Deutschmarks. That money, plus other money, I think, was tied up in a court case, which was they were donating to Christian we're going to donate the money to Christian charities. So I was in Bombay at the time, and I didn't know much about the actual details, but I did know that a lot of the money was collected with records, and it was one of the things I was never into was the record distribution. Because of that, I lost my temple in Edinburgh, which Hansa Duda closed down, and the deities from that temple are here, Nithai Satchinanda. So these Irish thieves came and took them.
Hey, you're an Irish thief.
But basically we were Maharaj and Prabhupada and maybe one other devotee. And like Prabhupada walking completely silent the whole morning walk. And Prabhupada's concentration was unbelievable. When he was concentrating, it was like there was something extremely, almost like the whole planet would shake in that kind of intensity. So at the end of the morning walk, as we were coming, we would come to the end, we'd sort of leave the beach. And then Prabhupada stopped. And he looked at us, we were standing right next to him, and he was looking at us, and we were looking at him. And Prabhupada would stick his cane in the floor. This time he did it particularly intensely. He dug his cane in the floor. He said, "It is just like the elephant." And we also went. Prabhupada said, "It is just like the elephant. He accumulates, accumulates, and accumulates. And his eyes got bigger on each accumulation." And then we were kind of waiting. And then Prabhupada said, "And then, what does he do?" And then in his "what does he do," he was quite angry. He said, "And then, what does he do?" We were also standing there going. And then Prabhupada said, "He passes big, big stool." We were all shocked. And then Prabhupada said it again, "Big, big stool." And then as he looked away, he said, "That is all." So that was Prabhupada's, if you like, conclusion on the German affair. Because the money was collected for India, Bangladesh, and it never got there. So I think that was Prabhupada's analogy for that particular mismanagement. Of course, one of the beauties also in the morning walks were that Prabhupada could bring out very wonderful philosophical depth in the most practical material circumstances. There used to be these tiny little crabs. They're like little, you know, these bugs on the beach. So, of course, as we were walking along, these little things would be racing to get to the sea. And then sometimes Prabhupada would stop and watch them. And Prabhupada would look at us and he'd say, "Why are they going that way and not that way?" What do you think? So Prabhupada says, the reason they're going that way is because they have the shelter of the ocean. And they know that that will give them all protection. Prabhupada said, this is super soul within their heart. The super soul is guiding them. as Krishna says, I am directing the wanderings of all living beings. From me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So the knowledge of the little insect is that Prabhupada said, this side there is also so many places they can go for shelter. But they are going that way because they know that we can't get in the ocean. Instinctively, within their heart, they know, because they're going the dry way, but they're going the wet way, because they know that the shelter is there. Just like so Prabhupada gave that example, very nice example, that similarly he said that the living entity will always be attracted to surrendering to Krishna, even though it may appear they're not, but the natural dictation of the heart will be towards the highest shelter. So then Prabhupada will give a whole talk on this Krishna giving shelter to the living entities. And there are many, many things like that. Many points like that. One of the things that used to happen, just to show you Prabhupada's tolerance, I don't know if devotees know this, but Prabhupada used to get kicked on almost every morning walk that he had with devotees. Because always devotees would try to scamper up to be near Prabhupada. And inevitably, when Prabhupada would stop to make a point, someone would stomp on the back of Prabhupada's heel. And I remember one distinct morning, we were coming out of Buried Place and Prabhupada stopped before we actually went on the walk. So Prabhupada said, keep distance. So he pointed with a stick like that. And as we were going around the park that morning, poor old, I don't know if I should mention his name, one god brother of mine, he stepped on Prabhupada's foot so much that he took Prabhupada's shoe off. And we all just stopped there. And we were so shocked. And Prabhupada just looked around and looked at him like, oh. It was like Lord Shiva at the end of the devastation. he really looked poor old Prabhuji. He was never the same since, but anyway. So one of the things, when we were on morning walks from Buried Place, many times we went past British Museum. And there'd be people walking to work, bowler hats and things like that around that area. So Prabhupada, inevitably, they come up and say, hey, good morning. And Prabhupada would say, good morning. And because we were all staunch brahmacharis, you know, good morning. That's not very Krishna conscious. Prabhupada would say, good morning. So that one devotee said to Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, why do you say good morning and not Hare Krishna? So then Srila Prabhupada said, because, oh yeah, this is right, that people would say good morning to Prabhupada, but sometimes Prabhupada would say good morning to a gentleman when he hadn't even said anything. That was right. So one time Prabhupada was saying good morning to someone and they said, oh, good morning. Very British way. And the devotee said, Prabhupada, why did you say good morning to him and not Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada said, because if I say good morning, then naturally he says good morning back. And Prabhupada says, when he says good morning back, then he's doing service to the devotees, because he's offering the devotees a good morning. So he said that, therefore, we are engaging him in Krishna's service. That one devotee who used to be quite cheeky was called Sukama. And he used to be, this is one of the beauties of Srila Prabhupada, was he tolerated all sorts of characters. I'd never known Prabhupada to, one of the characters we had was called Charanaravindam as an example. The Charanaravindam was about 6'5", and he used to wear an outfit like a big fairy. It was a hippie outfit with They used to have these sleeves that went, well, it looked like something like, who's that character, Merlin. He looked like a huge, giant Merlin that had fallen off a Christmas tree. So, the thing was that this robe, used to tie it like St. Benedict in the middle or something, and then it, the rest of it was going down to the floor. So he would dance in front of Prabhupada doing the Egyptian dance. And then he gets other arms and goes. Now the thing is that in the theater room, that was actually practically up to Prabhupada's nose. Prabhupada was sitting there, and this guy would be sitting at the front, and during kirtan he'd be doing the... And he'd go on the whole kirtan doing that. Now this was every morning. So then Samal Krishna Maharaj was getting really fried with this guy. I think everyone in the room was aware he'd like to bop him or something. But he was an initiated devotee too. So, of course, this thing he used to wear over his dhoti, so it's bona fide. But the dance was completely concocted. So then we were walking around on the morning walk, and then Tamal saw the guy, he saw this guy over there, and he kind of, he pointed to him and he said, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, the way that boy dances, he said, is Prabhupada. You know, it is. And Prabhupada said, no, he dances very nice. So, poor old Tamal saw it. So we had to tolerate that. And just to show you these kind of personal reciprocations, that same boy, Prabhupada went away in Vrindavan once, and he built this huge fountain out of a big lotus flower, this big pink lotus flower in the middle of Prabhupada's garden in Vrindavan. And everyone was getting on his case, because he'd gone in there and he was working at it, and no one knew what he was up to. And finally, although he was building a lotus flower, okay, but it was a big pink thing, huge thing. And then in the middle was this fountain. So then when Prabhupada came back, everyone thought, oh, Prabhupada's going to give it to him now, boy, when he sees this fountain. And Prabhupada loved the fountain. And then he called the boy in, and he was getting him to make it go higher. He said, can you get it higher? It was going about as high as that tree at one time. And there was another time when all the devotees had come into Prabhupada's room, and it was Prabhupada coming to Vrindavan, so we all went in the room. And Akshayananda at that time was temple president, and he was getting a lot of flack from Prabhupada about the management. So what happened was that after all the devotees left, because I don't know, Prabhupada's room, they used to put the sheets down, so all this dust, the dirt from people, the dust from devotees' feet had gone all over Prabhupada's room. So when they all left, the room was packed. So when they, I think it was festival time or something, but when they left, the whole place was full of dust kind of here and there and everyone. So then Prabhupada turned around to Akshayananda and he said, what is this? It is very dirty. I think it was one of the rasas he was having with Akshayananda at the time about keeping everything very clean, because by this time everyone had gone and Prabhupada was talking with Akshayananda and a few other devotees, and this boy Charanaravindam was in the room, and he said, that's not dirt, Prabhupada. He said, that's the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas. And Prabhupada said, oh, you are right. He said, just see my crooked vision. And then so Prabhupada Prabhupada smilingly accepted chastisement. That happened another time too, when Prabhupada was, there was this, of course, this famous installation at Amsterdam, Amsterdam Temple. So Prabhupada, everything was wrong. Everything about that installation was wrong. Did you go to that one?
I was there, yes.
Yeah, the one about the hippie chastising Prabhupada?
Yes, it was so wrong.
Yeah. So Prabhupada was actually chastising in front of the cameras and everything. He was chastising like anything. And then there was this hippie sitting next to Prabhupada. He was kept bucked up, but he was kind of hippie-ish. And he said, I think he said something like, "Oh, Prabhupada, you're always telling us when we get angry, chant Hare Krishna." And Prabhupada said, "Yes, very good idea." He said, "Bring me my bead bag." So Prabhupada, in Vrindavan, of course, when we opened the Vrindavan temple, there was a sort of rasa going on between Prabhupada and the management. One of the things which was, Prabhupada wanted to hear the chokidar, which are the night askaris, they're the night watchmen there.